Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
You heard Dick. It's time for another ballsy month of Adam's Monthly Nut. This month includes two Vinny Tortorich approved and invented ultra fat instant energy packs so you don't reach for that donut. Four shot glass ice molds so you can keep your whiskey cold and straight down the hatch. A bottle of Chateau Spill to remove wine stains or blood from the fine silk you're donning. Of course, a bottle of your choice. And the coup de grace, a digital download of the very first basic cable commentary, Roadhouse. This $60 value can be yours for only $25 at CorollaDrinks.com.
Well, a spectacular Reasonable Doubt for you guys today. We get all up in the Breonna Taylor situation with some angles, some information, some nuanced thoughts that you guys probably haven't heard before. So be prepared to be enlightened. First, I'll tell you about our good friend Jordan Harbinger. The Jordan Harbinger Show, everyone, a different kind of sponsor for this episode. The Jordan Harbinger Show, wide range of fascinating topics and heavy-hitting guests as well. Jordan has one of the more fascinating guys I've ever discussed and had a discussion with in my life, really. Apple named it one of the best pods of 2018. You always find something useful to apply to your own life, not just pop psychology. Lots of really useful bits for life hacks as well. We enjoy the show, and I know you're going to do it too. So search out the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R-B, as in boy, and I-N, as in Nancy, G-E-R on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. It's the Jordan Harbinger Show.
This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice. We got a minute. Get on. Welcome to the best hour in the universe. It is Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. It's Mark Garagus in New York City.
New York City. I'm very curious, though. You teased me off the air that you had a sports clip La Cañada disappointment for me.
Yeah, I do. It's an ethnic thing. I know you're proud.
Oh, no.
I know you're proud of your heritage. But you know, there's always a few bad apples. You know what I mean?
And
I'm Italian. So, you know,
are you over there?
We had Mussolini. I don't defend him. You know what I'm saying? So I was and we'll get into the whole Breonna Taylor stuff. We'll break down the game film. We'll get into that as well. But the first thing was I went to Sports Clips in La Cañada. I got my hair cut. I always like to feel it out. So every TV monitor is just blaring sports talk shows, and it ain't even highlights. It's like Stephen A. Smith arguing with Max Kellerman, you know, over the designated hitter, you know, and the poor right. beleaguered woman behind me. I go, any interest in sports? No, none at all. None whatsoever. It's like, great. You have a 40-inch monitor 5 feet from your head just with Max Kellerman screaming about the latest UFC fight. And I like to find people in their jobs when it's imposed. You know what I mean? I like the vegan that works at the deli. You know, I like the woman who the place only employs women. They all hate, they don't care about Max Kellerman. They don't give a shit about Stephen A. Smith. They're not caring about, they don't care about the spread on the Patriots game.
They don't even know what to wear those uniforms too, right?
Right. And they don't even know what an over under is. They think that's a sexual move. So But yet there's eight monitors and they're just blaring this shit the whole time. So that's my first thing. I like to examine the workplace.
Including the big one in the waiting area.
Right. So yeah, they can't escape. It's a hot sports talk. She has no interest in sports whatsoever. She said she likes reading. So then I said to her, what else? So they've been closed. They've been open. They moved it out onto the street. They moved it out into the parking lot. But if you can picture, Mark knows the lay of the land, it faces the west. It's a blacktop parking lot. There's no shade. And the only place in front is toward the sun. And there's no buildings blocking the sun or trees or anything
whatsoever. And you're right. You're kind of in that little alcove next to the 24 Fitness, and there's stairs, and the whole thing is a bad look.
Right. So she said by noon we'd have to cut out because it got too hot. So it's like, yeah, perfect.
Blazing.
Yeah, go out into the blacktop, sit there, and you become like a steel worker in Vegas. You know, you got to start at 4 a.m. and you got to knock out by noon because it's just too hot to work there. Fine. So the idea that you had to knock off by noon, and most guys probably got their haircuts after noon. But anyway, and then they move back in and then they move back out again. So I was just kind of asking her about how she's getting by and, you know, well, not welfare, but unemployment and this, that, and the other. Anyway, that's not where the heritage part comes in.
I know there's an Armo in the woodpile here.
There is. And so she had a bit of an accent. And she looked to be a little exotic, you know. And I said to
her, "Was her name Vartui?"
I did not ask because I don't judge. But I did say she then mentioned it's so hot. Someone is saying it's going to get hotter outside, and then she lamented it's earthquake weather. Now we're going to have another earthquake, and she said, "I'm worried." Oh, Gary's looking at me. There's such a thing as earthquake weather. It doesn't make sense, but many people believe.
There is.
Okay.
I believe it.
There's earthquake weather. So, fine. Then she lamented earthquake weather. Then I said to her, well, you know, good news. I used to do earthquake rehab. I've crawled under every house. I've bolted every foundation. I know what shear anchors and tension anchors are and hold downs. I didn't bore her with all the details, but I am an expert in earthquake prevention rehab. I know what buildings, I know what's vulnerable, what's not vulnerable. So I said, look, I'll put your mind at ease. Where do you live? She said, Burbank. I said, how old?
It's an upscale. It's an upscale Armo.
Yeah, I said, well, hold on. I said, so do you have an apartment? Do you have a condo? Like, do you rent? She said, I live in a house. I said, oh. Well, good for you. Like, I was thinking to myself, Jesus Christ, you cut hair at $18 a pop at Sports Clips, and you've been off for the last 9 months, but all right, you're a homeowner. And then she said, it's my uncle's house, but, you know, we live there. And I said, okay, but it's probably fine. What year was it built? So, now, from a guy who's doing earthquake rehab, you tell me the year. I'll tell you whether those walls are shear-walled or not. I'll tell you whether it's anchored down to the base, down to the mud sill or not. I'll tell you if there's HDs or A35 Tico clips. I'll tell you if that thing's strapped up and sheathed in plywood and like ready to go, or it's just, you know, stick framed on top of a brick foundation. You know,
what was the old style lath and plaster?
Gave way to button board, that gave way to to drywall. But the real strength is the outside of the house where they shear wall it. They just take plywood sheets or oriented strand board and they shear it off. Anyway, so I said, well, what year is the house? And she went, well, let's see, well, we've been there for 15 years. And I said, okay, '04, '05. Okay, that's a newer house. So you should be good. And she said, nah, somebody lived there before us. And I said, okay, how long were they there? And she went, I don't know. And I thought, okay. Well, now we
you
don't
asked
know.
Her what the style was?
No. I just like the idea that she broke her math down of we've been there for 15 years. And I was like, okay. But then someone else lived there before. Okay. For how long? I have no idea. I said, okay. Well, now we have no It could have been built in 1829. Michael Landon's character from Little House on the Prairie could have built that house when they were settling the West in 1871. So then I said, what's your nationality? And she said, Armenian. And I thought, oh, Mark's not going to like this. But then, but then she said, half Armenian, half Assyrian. And I said,
I said,
Syrian? And she said, no, not Syrian, Assyrian. And I thought, oh, I know Syrian, but I don't know what Assyrian is. But I thought Mark would know.
Yeah. And it's a, that's not an unusual combination. I mean, for many years, 35 years ago, I had a Syrian assistant, Jane, and there was quite a bit of, there's a great affinity between the Armenians and the Assyrians.
Yeah, evidently enough to crap out one employee at Sports Clips, La Cunada.
Now, I'm trying to think where. There's a large Assyrian community in the Central Valley, like Modesto. When I was doing a case up there a couple of years ago, every gas station I went into there, it was usually either Armo or Assyrian.
Well,
we have an affinity for liquor stores, gas stations, and Oriental rugs.
Well, I'll tell you what could save this. If I went to the Assyrian community and I just polled them, asking them, how old is your house? And if they all went, I don't know, then the Armo side would be off the hook. You see what I'm saying? So
yeah, but you know, I think part of it is the Assyrians, like the Armenians, we, you know, baked into our DNA is we've been chased all around the world, you know, by various competing tyrannical regimes or empires. So, you know, we consider wherever we plant down, it's ours until we get run out of town.
I recorded some of CNN this morning, and the reason I recorded it, or the transition, was that I thought was funny, is you can hear it. So Ben Crump did a press conference. That's Breonna Taylor's attorney. He's kind of the attorney go-to in these types of cases. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that is. Ben's got, he's carved out a niche, and I know him from national trial lawyers, and he knows how to do the dance between the media and the legal. And it's been reported, Gary, maybe you can confirm it. It's been reported that case settled for, I believe, $12 million. And, that seems to be kind of the figure now. We can break down the tape or we can see Ben. I don't know where we're headed, but I will tell you that obviously there's all kinds of discussion right now about the indictment of the one officer, the indictment of the other, see if Kerry's got it. Yeah.
Yeah, $12 million. That's what I heard. Mark, how much of this is a strategy in terms of getting the number up? So Ben Crump announces very early that his client was shot in bed while she was asleep and they got the wrong apartment. So the very first news everyone hears is they kicked open the wrong door, shot your client while she was sleeping. Then that gets kind of circulated. And in whatever day and age we're living in, it sort of is. It becomes a fact in a lot of people's minds. And then later on, other facts come out and it's not that. But yet, that's what he established. He got it out. People spread it around. And a lot of people didn't change their mind one way or the other later on down the road when other facts start coming out. Obviously, that drives up the price of the payday, right?
I don't know, not necessarily. And let me tell you why. Normally, you've got $12 million. I don't know, but I'm going to speculate based on my experience. $12 million has probably got several layers in a tower of insurance or self-retention, which means like they're deductible, or you've got a municipal collective. So there's going to be a lot of lawyers in the mix. For instance, if I'll just give you an example. If out of that $12 million, the first $3 million, the city self retains, meaning they got to pay it out of their pocket, the taxpayers. Over that, there may be another 4 million or 5 million that a cooperative amongst a number of cities, medium-sized cities, they oftentimes do a cooperative. And then the state or an excess carrier is the backstop. You've got lawyers for insurance companies at every stage. Trust me.
Oh, I don't know. I think Mark got, sorry, Mark. Down. Pop up, repeat the last 10 seconds.
They're trying desperately to beat down the number. So while I, and I'll address your thing in a sec. So you've got layers upon layers of lawyers who are trying to earn their, you know, insurance lawyers don't work on a contingency. The defense lawyers work on an hourly. So they've got an incentive to dig in and present their side of the case. And the plaintiff's lawyer is trying generally to paint the most favorable picture for his client's estate or family or the client. So there's always going to be that tension between the defense and the plaintiff. But there's also the other thing you got to factor in. The unrest, and this is something that's a more recent phenomena. You know, the cities have got to think to themselves, do we want to fight this out and have a public spectacle? Are we going to spend more money because the city's going to burn down, basically? Or are we going to try and get rid of this and take it off our plate? I think on the timeline here, they announced the $12 million right before they announced the grand jury had rejected against the two officers. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think those are linked. I think they thought, we've got to somehow preempt this. If we get the family taken care of or the estate taken care of, that's going to save us some dollars in the long run. I think that's part of the thinking that goes into this.
I agree, but it doesn't really answer my question, which is if you...
It doesn't. But remember, that would matter. Your question would matter if you're going to go to jury trial, would be my response.
Oh, but it doesn't drive up the settlement price?
Not necessarily. It might if you're saying it's fomenting or it's making...
Right. You're worried about the populace. You want to settle before things burn down. We just using your model, it's going to cost more to rebuild the courthouse than it would be to pay out $12 million. And that's what it feels strategically logical to me to get a bigger check.
Yeah, I understand that it could look like that. I don't disagree with that. But I will tell you, based on personal experience, that sometimes it's just the calculus of if we let this go out. I mean, you don't even have to be out there articulating it. It's just the calculus in everybody's brain is you get into a mediated discussion and you start talking about, hey, if this doesn't look good, no matter what you do. And in Breonna Taylor, I mean, it's to my mind, fairly outrageous what happened, but not for the reasons that I think everybody talks about.
Oh, good. I mean, that's why you're here. So I want to get into that. Is $12 million a lot, a little, about right?
It's just about right.
About right. Also, yeah. Traditionally, I know you don't know what deal was struck, but what percentage would Crump get off of the 12 traditionally?
Traditionally, a third, and some jurisdictions, I don't know there, but some jurisdictions, if there's a minor who has a claim, that sometimes it's capped at 25%. California used to be, now it can go up to a third, but somewhere between 25 and three, probably looking at $3 or $4 million.
For Crump. Is her money, her family, the money of the deceased, is that money tax free? And then how does taxes work on his money?
I always give the caveat. I'm not giving tax advice, but there's various ways that the IRS is constantly changing the target, that you can either, that there's language or there's an agreement or there's a way it's structured. One of the things that's done now is, especially if you've got minors involved, you'll do a structured settlement, which means the insurance company, which is paying the money, will then basically take the money and guarantee you on kind of an annuity so that the kid has money throughout life. And you have certain breaks at certain points, like in high school, you get some money if you want to go private school, you know, college, at college age, you get some money that would pay for college, things like that. And that will defer taxes as well. There's, I mean, it's very complicated. You generally need to have a tax advisor there, generally need to have a structured settlement type person involved.
But it's taxable income. It's taxable
money. Some could be taxable, some could be non. I mean, we could spend four episodes on emotional distress and taxes.
The money is going to adults. You know what I mean? So theoretically, I had heard that money went tax free. Not her in particular, just in general. When you got an award from the city that way or the state, that was tax free in general.
It's more complicated now.
Okay,
it used to be, but it's more complicated now.
Would they be paid in a lump traditionally, or would it be spread out like a lottery win?
You usually negotiate that. You can usually say, I want it in a lump. You never do it in a lump, in my humble opinion, if it's somebody who's under 18 who's part of the thing.
Okay.
Let's get into a little bit. I want to start with the no-knock warrant.
Yes. Can I play you a clip? I'll play the clip from CNN just because this doesn't
look
shed.
At you get that. Look at that impish look.
And it made me laugh because CNN has been beating us over the head with the coronavirus for the last 7 months. And it's a little long. I'll cut it off at the end, but it's really the transition and less what Ben Crump says and more CNN. So just listen. You have to stay with me on this one. But go ahead, Gary.
And this is CNN.
Well, right now, daily coronavirus cases are climbing in 23 states across the country. We are just in the first week of fall.
Now, listen to this. The CDC now projects more than 20,000 more Americans will die from coronavirus in the next 3 weeks, about 1,000 a day. The death rate per day had dropped. It's now tweaking up again above 1,000. This is, we learn new details about the AstraZeneca vaccine trial that has been put on hold, one of several trials now underway. CNN senior medical correspondent Elizabeth Cohen and CNN's Lucy Kafanoff with us now. Elizabeth, what is your new reporting on the AstraZeneca vaccine?
Jim, as you noted, this trial has been on hold for more than 2 weeks. There's been this started with great promise, but now we're in this hold that has gone on for more than 2 weeks. Our reporting, based on documents from the folks who are running the trials, is that there have been various accounts of what's happened, of the illnesses suffered by study subjects after they received the vaccine. Let's take a look at what our reporting shows. There was a pause in the trial.
Elizabeth, my apologies. We have to jump to this press conference with the family of Breonna Taylor. I apologize. Here is their attorney, Benjamin Crump.
Representing and fighting for respect, dignity, and justice for Breonna Taylor and her family.
All right, the reason I'm laughing is because 5 seconds. All right, what the fuck happened to coronavirus, CNN? I thought we're all dying of coronavirus. Now we got a bald guy in a bad suit yelling, no justice, no peace, and a large group of people that aren't socially distancing. All right, I guess we're done with the corona. I guess we're done scaring the fuck out of everybody with the coronavirus now. We're going to move on to racial tensions. It's got to be one or the other. It's one or the other. This thing is so important. Oh, wait a minute. There's a guy bloviating over here on a fucking soapbox. No, we'll talk to him. The thing went on for 40 minutes. Every relative of every family member got up there and bloviated. It's like, okay, CNN, wait a minute. I thought there was a vaccine, but there's a trial and it went bad. I'm on the edge of my sofa. I got to leave the house today. What are we going to do? Oh, now we're going to watch the bald guy in the bad suit bloviate for 40 minutes. All right. I got it.
Somebody in the office, I think, was channeling their inner Corolla and was telling me that they don't understand why the chart, because I don't watch CNN anymore. I can't handle cable news. But apparently there's a chart and it's red, green or whatever. And she was saying the chart is now all green. And apparently John King, who now used to do kind of the red and the blue states is now doing the corona states, and it's all green and they're still talking about it. Is that do I have that right?
It's always an uptick, or they worry, or new stuff out of the CDC, or we worry when flu season comes around and everyone closes their windows because it gets cold outside and we all breathe recirculated air.
Look, do you remember when you and I talked about Sweden and we were getting tweeted at by people about how crass we were way back when with Sweden? Has anybody updated what's happening in Sweden, by the way?
No, they were maniacs who were going full Thelma and Louise on coronavirus, speeding toward the Grand Canyon. And then a few months went by and it turned out to be okay. So that's not news anymore. So we don't get the follow up on that. We only get the bad news.
Wouldn't you just love to get, I would just, you know, the, that Rand Paul Fauci encounter. And I always thought Rand Paul had more brains, but Fauci ran circles around him. But I wish somebody would ask Fauci the right questions. I mean, he's obviously highly intelligent. He obviously has dedicated his whole career to this. But I watch those C-SPAN things, and I can't understand why people don't ask him the right questions. It's astonishing.
I think that's probably you and me are in a perpetual state of why didn't you ask this question? Like, why? That's all.
Jim, I don't understand. Are you going to do an ad?
All right, I'm going to do an ad. I want to talk No Knock. I want to talk some of the nuts and the bolts of that case. And you're uniquely qualified, obviously. I'm very eagerly anticipated talking to you today about what your take is on the actions of the police and Breonna Taylor. I want everything. First, I'll tell you guys about Tommy John, the secret to staying sweat-free this summer. Tommy John's summer-ready, ultra-breathable underwear and bras, cool cotton underwear for men and for women. Like having your own on-body AC unit made with premium natural Pima cotton for enhanced airflow. It evaporates sweat fast. This stuff is the best. It's hot outside. You go for a long hike. You work up a little lather. They just air dry right on you. Lounge pants, lazy day joggers, soft Zoom-ready tees and polos as well. Upgrade to Tommy John, and you get super breathable designs. This stuff is the best. You'll never go back to what you're wearing. It's the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free, guaranteed. No adjustment needed, right, Gary?
That's right. For a limited time, go to TommyJohn.com/Adam to get 20% off site-wide. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off site-wide. TommyJohn.com/Adam. See site for details.
All right, you want to start with No Knock, or where do you want to go?
Yeah, I did a little bit of a dive in today, and it's always been one of my kind of pet peeves for years. I had a case years ago in Monrovia with No Knock, another one in Pasadena. I've had them over the years. I've never understood this idea of a No Knock warrant. You know, the whole idea of America and the Fourth Amendment, you know, people will talk about the Second Amendment, but the Second Amendment did not evolve to the way it is understood today until roughly 2010, the Heller case. The Fourth Amendment, however, has always been premised on the idea of what's called the Castle Doctrine, that you're not going to have people knocking down your doors in your castle. Your home is your castle. That's where the expression comes from. And by the way, the whole idea of the colonies separating from England and the king was to eliminate what was called historically writs of assistance, that the king just can't send people in to bang down your door and house the soldiers and things of that nature. So how we ever got to the point where the Castle Doctrine was literally kind of eviscerated to the point where you have no knocks is beyond me. But what it was historically is they said, cops said to judges, and judges bought it, well, you got to have a no knock because there's exigent circumstances. And the exigent circumstances, and by the way, this all arose out of this idiotic war on drugs, which is most of the bad consequences in U.S. Jurisprudence. But the war on drugs, the cops started saying, well, the only way we can get the evidence is we got to bang down the door. Remember Daryl Gates and the battering rams.
Right.
We got to bang down the door because otherwise they're going to flush the drugs down the toilet and then we got no evidence. Okay, who cares? But anyway.
Well, Mark, let me jump in.
Yeah.
I've always sort of said, why not just surveil the place and then when they get up and leave for work in the morning and they're walking out with their commuter mug, you just slide up on them and put zip ties on them and tell them to sit on the curb. Why not that? What do you think they're doing that night?
Yeah, you explain it to me. I've argued that. I've argued that very thing. There was no exigent circumstances. There was no reason to come in at midnight or 2 or 4. You know, California's got a variation on the search warrant night service, yes or no. Most judges smartly and judiciously press no. But there really is not, I don't think, and there's you can make a legal argument now that the U.S. Supreme Court has said, unless you can get in and do with specificity, as to why that there's no need for it.
Well, let me ask real quick. Lori Loughlin, Roger Stone, why do they have to go to those people's houses in the wee hours?
And that's for an arrest. I mean, that's right. There's absolutely no exigent circumstances there. Wait until they exit, as you're saying, pull them over in the car, pull them over as they walk down the driveway.
I mean, right. Didn't you say like with Roger Stone or Lori Loughlin that you just tell their attorney to surrender them?
Absolutely. Once again, what has evolved in the last 25, 30 years, it used to be there was a collegial atmosphere, whether you were a public defender or a private lawyer, you would call up the DA and say, my client will be here. My client will surrender or do that. This is what I don't understand. Roger Stone, for instance, I'm no fan of Roger Stone, but I'm no fan of the way he was taken down either. It's part of my intellectual schizophrenia about what's going on in America right now is there's no reason in the world why if you're talking to the lawyer, because understand what happens, especially in white collar cases. You know when your client is a target. You know what's happening. You talk with the prosecutor. You're trying to talk the prosecutor out of bringing charges. So if you can't talk the prosecutor out of it, then why can't the prosecutor just say, okay, I don't want to go arrest them. Turn yourself in 1:30 today, and then I'll meet you at the courthouse.
First off, banging on someone's door at 5 in the morning is a good way to get someone shot.
Which is what happened.
In that story, I'm talking about Lori Loughlin or Roger Stone.
Roger Stone, I mean, can you imagine somebody, first of all, that goes back to the Castle Doctrine. Almost every jurisdiction, you've got a right to be armed in your house. Almost every jurisdiction. If you believe and you have a reasonable belief an intruder is coming in, you have a right to use deadly force inside your house. You and I have talked about the cases I've had where even in the what's called the curtilage, which is the boundaries of your house, you've got a right to defend yourself.
Right. So why are we risking, the killing of a pet even by showing up with stormtroopers at 5 in the morning? By the way, what about the neighbors? You know what I mean? Don't you think they'd prefer people just go in and surrender themselves? Is Lori Loughlin, Roger Stone, are these guys flight risk? If they were going to flee, then why not flee the day before? What's it possible? I was talking about this with Ball Bryan. He said, well, maybe if they knew this, they would destroy evidence. Like maybe they were trying to get some evidence. But wouldn't you destroy that evidence months ago? You weren't doing it that night.
If you knew... Look, what people don't understand, there is a quantitative and qualitative difference between state court actions and federal court actions. The old joke is federal court actions move at a glacial pace, meaning it's not like state court where the cops, you rob a place and or a person and or burglarize a place and the cops chase you by the helicopter and then arrest you and then charge you and you're in court within 72 hours. There's oft times it'll take a year or 2 years in federal court. And you know everything that's going on and they're issuing grand jury subpoenas. And if you destroy evidence, then you're going to get an obstruction charge on top of it. So no, that is that the whole idea of destroying evidence in exigent circumstances is a complete ruse in order to avoid doing what I consider to be just normal police work. And once again, almost all of it is traceable to the war on drugs.
So I agree. So why doesn't the judge in the Brown and Taylor case say, this is an apartment building, there's units all over the place, there's literally two sheets of drywall between every unit. I mean, you could punch your fist through the wall, go flying through the other side. A bullet wouldn't even slow down going through it. Why am I kicking open doors in the wee hours of the night? There's two people in there. They don't appear to be a threat, an immediate threat. Why not surveil them? And when they come out in the morning, just come up to them, put the zip ties on them, we'll bring them in. Or we'll set them down.
And by the way, so that you understand, the one cop who got charged was a cop who missed. And the bullets went in, apparently, to a different location or a different apartment.
Yeah.
Which had a kid in. So here you got, to your point, sheetrock. And it's not the first time that bullets hit or go through the ceiling or go through somewhere else and just miss a kid.
Every time a kid gets hit by a bullet in a crib, it's not because the crib's out on the sidewalk.
Right.
He's in a room. The drive-by goes right through the wall. That's how it works.
And why is this judge, by the way, where is the cop and why? And I don't think he was indicted. In fact, the opposite. The cop who signed the warrant apparently said, this is what's being reported. If this is true, this drives me crazy, that he had talked to a postal inspector who gave him the information in order to get the warrant. Well, apparently they've tried to talk to the postal inspector who denies they had the conversation. Well, you know, I will tell you something. If you're a non-cop, non-law enforcement, and you had done that in front of a judge, you would be charged with the logical and probable consequences theory of potentially a murder case. But this cop isn't indicted. I mean, I could give you a million different theories here. The judge is generally cloaked with judicial immunity, but the cops aren't. But the problem is, and it goes back to another bone of contention here. The problem is that the cops originally, you were supposed to, with Miranda and the exclusionary rule, exclude the evidence. But then Scalia came along and said, well, we don't need to exclude in these extreme cases. You just sue the cops. Well, then you start to sue the cops. And then it goes back to what you and I always talk about. They get qualified immunity. And so you're left in this endless circle of a judicial circle jerk.
So what would the cops say? I'm always looking for like, well, what would you say? You say to the judge, we need this warrant. We need a no-knock warrant. We need to go in at night. We suspect that there's a woman who lives in this apartment and she may or may not be taking drugs, sort of laundering,
receiving packages.
Now, why doesn't the judge go, well, aren't the packages going to be there in the morning at 6 a.m.? Or isn't she going to be there? Or what's the timeline? Is she have a drop tonight with a Colombian drug lord? Or is she just going to watch TV and go to bed? And if so, why not see her in the morning?
Well, based on my experience, usually when the cops say stuff in these affidavits, like, I talked to a CI, a confidential informant, or I talked to another law enforcement person, in this case, a postal inspector. You know, they never want to divulge that. Why don't they want to divulge it? Because it's a complete ruse. And I agree with you. The judge who signed this warrant, I don't think understands U.S. Supreme Court law, because I'm not going to get into the weeds on it, but I will tell you, you can make a compelling argument that this was an infirm, illegal, unconstitutional warrant from the get-go, if they understood what the law was. There isn't a basis for any of this. There's also a doctrine called staleness, in very varies from jurisdictions. You
Hold
just
on,
can't
Gary,
throw out
find
things.
Out the judge. Was it a female judge? For some reason, I think I heard that, but Gary can find that out. Anyway, sorry.
I don't know, but it's the whole thing to me is fairly outrageous, but the frustration on my part is that it's now just coming to light. This has been a fight. Anybody who does criminal defense will tell you this is standard operating procedure and has been for the last 40 years.
It's kind of interesting. Awful. It's a female judge, which I see everything now through the lens of social justice and whatever's going on. Her head should be on the chopping block. In my opinion, she's very culpable in this. Now,
if everything I've read, and I always couch it that way because I never want to hang judges out to dry unnecessarily because, you know, the caveat that a judge can't comment and everything else. But everything that I've read, there needs to be some real scrutiny. You know, they were hanging Aaron Persky up by his toes and he lost his job in Santa Clara when he exercised his judicial discretion. This is a case where you could make an argument that this was outrageously unconstitutional the whole way from the get-go.
Well, there were many.
But first, I'm going to tease that. First, I want to talk about upstart.com. You like Upstart?
Yeah.
During these economically turbulent times, everyone wants to feel more financially secure. Why throw away money on high interest credit card debt? Upstart.com is a revolutionary lending platform that knows you're more than your credit score, offers smarter interest rates to help pay off credit card debt, goes beyond the credit score when assessing your credit worthiness. They reward you for education. Look at that, Adam. Education you get rewarded for. Job history. Look at that, Adam. Fast and simple to check your rate. Won't affect your credit score. That's a big bonus. Once the loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds. Guess what? Next business day.
Wow.
Over 400,000 people have used Upstart. Should try it, right, Gary?
That's right. See why Upstart is top ranked in their category with a 4.9 out of 5 rating on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/doubt to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes. That's upstart.com/doubt. Your loan amount will be determined based on your credit, income, and certain other information provided in your loan application. Not all applicants will qualify for the full amount.
So, the judge
Who is it? Who is the judge?
Mary Shaw.
Mary Shaw. So there were multiple.
What's Mary Shaw's background, Gary?
Still working on that. So the name's a little common, but give me time.
There are multiple warrants for that evening. I think a lot of people.
She signed. She signed 5 no-knock warrants in a 12-minute period.
Now, then we get to the in a 12-minute period.
Wait, there you go. 12-minute period. She was at the Evelyn Wood speed reading. Boy, she really did some strict scrutiny of those warrants. I mean, it's the definition of a rubber stamp.
Right.
You know, we used to have a buddy of mine. I won't mention his name because he probably wouldn't want me to. But there was a judge who was famous in the criminal courts building downtown and for issuing these warrants. And usually after she had been having lunch at the Velvet Turtle back then. Remember the Velvet Turtle?
Sure, yeah. One of the many places the Corollas didn't eat. But go ahead.
So she would go down there to the Velvet Turtle. She would get liquored up. She'd be back at 1:30 in the afternoon. God forbid that he ever did a preliminary hearing in front of her in the afternoon because you couldn't understand anything she was saying. And my buddy used to file what he called motions to quash and traverse, which is to challenge the warrant. And he said she was the he actually put this in paperwork. She was the designated search warrant whore, that the cops would come in the afternoon and knew that she would sign absolutely any search warrant. And he would challenge it based on that. And I'm not calling this particular judge by any pejorative name, but I will tell you that 5 warrants in 12 minutes is suspicious on its face.
What's the background on the judge, Gary?
She received her undergraduate and JD from the University of Louisville. She became a judge before becoming a judge in 07. She was a senior staff attorney for the 30th Judicial Circuit and a trial commissioner for Jefferson District. Previously, she was an attorney in private practice. She was elected. She was elected in 2006, reelected without opposition in 2014, and her term will end in 2023.
So, you know what the problem is? I'll tell you what the problem is. The symbiotic relationship between the judiciary and law enforcement. And it's because they're all deathly afraid when they're elected that they're going to get challenged by a prosecutor as being soft on crime. That's not the case now, right now, but that's been the case historically for the last 40 years.
You know, they should have the relationship that I have with the Department of Building and Safety in Glendale, where they go, what do you want to do? I want to put a patio. Not so fast, bub. You better prove it. Hold on, let me get my pants down. All right, hold on, let me fluff myself. You want to do what? I like to put a patio on my own property. Really? Well, hey, Bob, get in here. Yeah, this guy, no, he wants to put a patio. Not so fast, buckaroo. Not so fast. Slow your roll. You brought your checkbook, right? Yeah, I did. Okay. We have to, this is, whoo. Man. That pen's going to run out of ink. We got to think about this. We need.
Can you imagine if that was the standard? Just be that way. Oh, as listen. Opposed to, oh, boom.
Oh, listen. That you have to submit your plans to plan check, and then there's approval, and you literally submit them, and they go, "All right, come back in 2 weeks." And you come back in 2 weeks, and there's a whole bunch of shit circled. You know what I mean? Like, where's your handicap ramps? Like, I'm not handicapped. That's a good one. All right, go out and get that handicap ramp, and then all this shit, and then they go make these revisions, and then bring them back, and we'll submit them again, and we'll put them through plan check again. Like, it's literally that. What should happen is you should get this paperwork for your no-knock warrant, and we should submit it to plan check, not sign it and hand it back to you.
Okay, you're a genius. This could be the wave of the future. We'll have the judicial equivalent of building and safety.
Well, what it is they're not there to aid and abet you. They're there to act as a stopgap. There's like, you want to do what? That could be dangerous, or it could be a fire hazard, or it could block the view of your neighbors, or there's many different things. And we need to make sure that all of that isn't going to happen, and that you're going to do this safely and comply with all the codes. And then and only then will we give you the permission to move forward with this no-knock patio. So,
you know, it's very interesting that because you view government the right way, because the criminal justice system is just the DMV with a robe. I mean, it is the government. It's a lot of civil servants. Same thing my father used to say. Cops are nothing but guys who otherwise would be truck drivers who went through a course at the academy. And why do we expect them or elevate them or anything else? There's been this whole kind of mythological law and order, Nancy Grace, wrapping yourself in righteousness or ideological purity when it isn't that. I mean, it's the opposite.
Well, the judge, I mean, the thing about the judge and the no-knock warrant, there are so many ways shit can go wrong with a no-knock warrant. I mean, the best case is that you pull frightened, scared, and half-naked people out of their house and wake up everyone in the apartment building. And no one gets shot. That's the best. There's a version where the cop gets shot. There's a version where the dog gets shot. There's a version where Breonna Taylor gets shot. It's all on the table. I mean, when you say no knock warrant, middle of the night, in a very dense apartment unit with all the other units right, left, above, backed up to everything, there is the potential for serious and catastrophic failure. There just is.
Right.
I mean, you really have to take that. You have to pay very close attention to that. And again, whether it's Roger Stone or Breonna Taylor, like, wait till they leave their house the next morning, pull a cruiser up and take them on in. Like, what are we doing here? See,
and in a lot of ways, Breonna Taylor and these no-knock warrants are even worse because they are search warrants as opposed to arrest warrants. A search warrant is not only are we just looking for somebody to grab, and your point, why don't you just wait till they come out? But the search warrant is the middle of the night, we got to go search this place. We're going to go in there, as you say, in a densely populated place, and we're just going to wreak havoc in a place. Let me suggest something. It's just because there are no consequences.
Right.
It's just because there is this awful thing called qualified immunity. It's just because there isn't any kind of punishment other than once the populace gets upset. And this is rare. What's happened in the last 7 or 8 months is light years from what we've been toiling against for the last 40 years.
Well, let me ask a few more questions in the brief time we have left. So then there becomes, it's a no-knock warrant, but then there was allegedly knocking and announcing somebody heard it, other people didn't. My head on the argument of whether they knocked or not isn't so much in did a neighbor hear it, did a neighbor not hear it. My head on it is if the occupants of the apartment were up and standing in the hallway when the door busted open and they were formally in bed, then there must have been a knock, because if you literally just busted the door down, they'd be in bed. That it wouldn't take them
I don't know what the layout is, because I've had and I'm just talking anecdotally, or hypothetically. I don't know whether where the bedroom was vis-a-vis the door that was knocked down, whether or not they were behind another door in a bedroom such that you hear the banging on the door, because you could have. I mean, did it take one time to knock the door down, two times, three times, or whatever? I mean, you get startled. If the gun's next to you, you grab the gun, you jump up because you're being startled. If they're just in the living room, then all hell breaks loose. I can see it either way. I'll tell you the one thing that was very suspicious to me, and I've got a case in L.A. right now. Doesn't get much attention, but the LAPD blew my client's brains out, but he survived, believe it or not. And they went and they tried to find witnesses, and they concocted, as LAPD, nobody else can do as great. They tried to turn it around. The fact that the cops here could not find, out of the 16 witnesses, if this is true, as I always say, anybody who heard it, any of the neighbors who heard the knock, to me, that's saying something, because usually the cops will do their creative witness tampering.
Well, the number of times it took to bust the door down is definitely something that should be considered. I would say,
I mean, you could do that by looking at the door, couldn't you?
Yes.
This is a great question for you. If you were given that door with your experience, could you surmise certain things?
Sir, it was a Schlage deadbolt. The throw on the Schlage is 1.5 inches. It was mortised in, but it didn't have a proper strike plate. The strike plate was, they used drywall screws, which are insufficient because they don't have a tent that pull out, and the lateral load is not strong enough to hold the strike plate in. And the door jamb was made of finger joint pine, which is notoriously weak and has almost no shear strength. So the deadbolt bolt went right through the side of it. And I say a good fart would have taken that door down, Your Honor. Sorry,
you know,
Gary Scott.
I've always been a little bit curious about this aspect of the knock, or yada yada. Why get a no-knock warrant and then go and knock and then batter the door down? That seems confusing to me. I always assumed he was up because it took him 2 or 3 strikes.
I never thought about it.
You can't really find that online because of the no-knock nature.
I would be curious if they used one of those sort of lead-filled pipes with the two handles on it that they use as kind of a battering ram. I can tell you that traditionally, apartments have that deadbolt and just a little bit of door jam, and they're not, they're pretty easy to kick open, pretty easy. But on the other hand, if it wasn't a great neighborhood, if in fact she was dating a guy who dealt drugs and did some business in her unit several months ago, maybe there was a, maybe it was beefed up. You know, maybe they put a couple of deadbolts on there, or a carriage bolt, not a carriage bolt, but yes.
If the ex-boyfriend was in custody, it's, did anybody ask that question? Where is the ex-boyfriend? If he's in custody, what is the exigent? What is the urgency? Why, the whole thing exposes what every public defender in the country will tell you is the intellectual bankruptcy of the criminal justice system. I mean, I've said it. Look, I wrote the book 7 years ago. The system is broken. It's irretrievably broken.
Well, let's figure out what to do with the cops. So the judge, to me, there's a couple of people to, there's enough blame to go around. Like, let's face, well, first off, the boyfriend didn't have to deal drugs, didn't have to use her address or register the car in his name or whatever it is. Let's not forget there's a bad guy somewhere floating, you know, in this mix. That guy. Then the next is the judge. The judge should have really vetted those warrants and said, I don't, look, go get the drug dealer, but I don't know why we're going to this chick's apartment in the middle of the night. Let's pull that one out of the deck. Then it becomes the cops. The cops. What did the cops know when they went in? Because obviously, if you're just a foot soldier and somebody says, hey, we got a warrant, you're coming with us tonight, bust that door down, you bust the door down and someone shoots at you, then you're just, in a way, as much a victim as everyone else, as the people in the unit. But who was the cop?
If you're the cop who's authoring the affidavit,
that's different.
Yeah,
right.
That's the person I want to put on the stand. That's the person I want to cross-examine. And that's the person I want a real judge with a real judicial. You know, I've always said with jurors, and I explained this to jurors, you're not here to be a cheerleader for the prosecution. You're supposed to look at this evidence critically. That's the whole thing that separates us from a tyranny and from a judge should do the same. Instead of a judge, all you have to do is go to traffic court. If you go to traffic court and you see 99 times out of 100, the judge believes whatever bullshit the cop says and finds you guilty. I mean, it doesn't matter what. You say, I didn't run the light. They said, the cop says you did. Boom, you're guilty.
No,
why would the cop lie?
The only way you get off is if the cop doesn't show up.
Exactly. Exactly. And why is that? Because the cop, even though the law states it, the jury instructions state it, that they don't get more. It's the old saw that why would the cop lie? Well, the cop would lie because, as my father used to say, it shouldn't say to protect and serve. It should say to arrest and convict on the side of the cop car.
So did the guy who went through, if you take the cop who went through the door, if that guy applied for the warrant, then I want to talk to him. If he was just the first through the door, got shot at and fired back, I'm done with that guy.
He gets the Nuremberg defense. But the guy who really set this in motion is the one who did the affidavits. And that judge was an accomplice.
And which cop was the cop that did the affidavits, or was he even on site?
I don't think he was charged, and I don't know if he was on site. But I know that the one guy who actually, the irony, and it's a sick irony, is that the cop who missed is the one who missed his shots is the one who gets indicted.
Yeah, that guy gets sort of reckless driving for me.
Yeah. If he had killed the wrong guy inside, it would have been okay. It's literally judicially sanctioned insanity.
No, I agree. My feeling is a judge, right in the title, has the word judge, like judgment. You know what I mean? Like these cops, once they're in sort of the fog of war, really, who the fuck knows at this point? It's dark. The adrenaline is pumping. Shots fired. Everyone wants to know, like, oh, well, the guy fired like 10 shots. Why'd I have to fire 10 shots? Because once you're in it, you're in it. You're a shark in a feeding frenzy. I wish they were better, but they're not going to be. To me, it's like, what is that judge doing? Why is that judge even setting the table for this potential tragedy? So I'm curious about that, but I'm also curious about the cop and the warrant, and which one of those guys pulled that warrant or requested that warrant. And maybe Gary will figure it out. I don't know. And maybe it's multiple cops. I mean, there's five raids going on in that evening. Also, see, I could never be a judge because you said, I want to go kick in five doors tonight with a bunch of people that are asleep who, you know, may be armed, may not be armed. Maybe they got a German Shepherd or pit bull. Maybe they don't. But anyway, we're going in. I couldn't go to bed that night. I'd be like, well, this shit's going down. I mean, it's good. Someone's going to get fucked up with this. I don't know why. I'm sort of focusing on the judge. But the thing that is interesting from an optic standpoint is it's all about, say, her name now, and it's all about black women needing to be protected. And surprise, surprise, it was a woman judge. So now it kind of fucks the narrative up a little bit, and that's why I believe I haven't heard anything about the woman. I haven't heard anything. Because if this judge, like you said, the one up north when the frat boy was drunk,
Aaron Persky,
he
lost his job.
Right.
Lost his job for exercising his judicial discretion and was basically didn't do a thing wrong.
I'm gonna,
no matter what that Stanford busybody professor says.
I want to tease my last question, which is Crump, the attorney for the Taylor family, has been talking about releasing the transcripts or releasing the court file,
the grand jury.
I heard him chanting that over and over this morning. I didn't know what it meant, if it was real. Why wouldn't they? I'm going to tease this and do a spot, but why would they keep hold of it? What would it say if they did? Was it important or was it just a rallying call? First, I'll tell you about ZipRecruiter. Hiring can be difficult, especially now. Government regulations, what to do, do you supply masks? Monica Starks needed to hire for a construction company, GS Group, but was having a hard time with so many candidates out there. But then she switched to ZipRecruiter. It finds candidates and invites them to apply. That's how she found Lamont Jenkins 5 minutes after she posted for the job. Now she's hired accountants and project managers and field scientists all through ZipRecruiter. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. That's how good it is. It's ZipRecruiter, right, Gary?
That's right. See for yourself how ZipRecruiter makes hiring faster and easier. Try it now for free. That's right, free at ZipRecruiter.com/doubt. That's ZipRecruiter.com/doubt. ZipRecruiter.com/doubt. And Ace, you can ask Mark your question. I have the name of the detective who filed the affidavit. Let me do some cross-referencing with the officers on the scene.
All right, and I should tell everyone, Mark and I are going to be doing a live Reasonable Doubt at 4 o'clock this coming Saturday. Wise guys in Salt Lake City.
Absolutely, and let me add on to that for listeners of this program, you can expect your Reasonable Doubt to come a little later than usual because that will be next week's episode, so we'll be releasing it more like Saturday night as opposed to the Friday night that you're used to.
And I usually say, come on out and see how the sausage is made, but it sounds sort of homoerotic to me. So come on out and see how the fudge is packed. Anyone with a sweet tooth, come on down. All right. So, Mark, what about a grand jury testimony? Is it traditional?
Well, grand jury traditionally is secret and is generally not released until and unless the indictment is brought. Once an indictment is brought, it's generally released, although it'll be interesting if the officer who is charged is asking that it be sealed. It's actually somewhat of a perversion. I would assume he gets it, but why they want to see it and why Crump is asking is because he wants to see what the presentation of evidence was to the grand jury for the two officers who weren't indicted. And you want to know, and I'll leave it at this, the grand jury will do 9 million times out of 9 million and one, whatever the prosecutor, in this case, the attorney general, wants. So the reason he's asking is it's obvious that the attorney general in this case did not want an indictment of those officers. And it's obvious to me that this was a setup, that they knew exactly what was going to happen, that they settled the civil case, that they knew they were not going to ask for the officers to be indicted who did the shooting, and that they were going to throw the one guy under the bus who actually was the bad shot. And they knew that was going to cause civil unrest. And so they want to keep the grand jury transcript secret because they know that it's a cluster F if they release it, because it'll show that the AG pretty much preordained the result, which is almost always the case.
The cop evidently who filed for the warrant was not on the scene at that time.
Of course, and with impunity, and you know, and it'll be interesting to see if anybody ever calls that person to task. I assume it was a male. What if it was a female?
It was a male.
Okay. All right. Well, enough about us.
Yes.
You can go to adamcarolla.com if you want to go out and see me doing stand up all around the place. Again, coming up in Wise Guys, 4 o'clock this Saturday, the 3rd, I think it is. See you live, Reasonable Doubt. And then also my book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animals, available on Amazon, wherever you get books. Write a review. I will read it. My YouTube channel's got all my stand up on it as well. So enjoy that. Mark, plugs.
Plugs. Capri and Naya in Southampton open this weekend. Get over there. Prova in Times Square. We're open again. Try at V Palm Springs, which I hear is pretty nice this weekend, along with Gigi's, the restaurant there. Engine Company 28, 10E Mediterranean Tapas downtown. Enjoy them all. Casa Tropicana in San Clemente.
All right, I will see you Friday at the Burbank Airport to climb aboard your private flying yacht. And until next time, this is Adam Carolla from Mark Garagos saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.